You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Several of Dennis Lehane's novels, Mystic River, Gone Baby Gone, and Shutter Island, have been adapted into successful movies, but his latest book, The Drop, began as a screenplay, the first written by Mr. Lehane himself. Now the novel and the movie, the last to star James Gandolfini, are being released at the same time. It's about a rescued dog, a neighborhood bar, a botched robbery, and as always with Dennis Lehane, the specter of the past. It's published by William Morrow. I'm very pleased that it brings Dennis Lehane back to our show. Welcome back.
Oh, good to be back. Thanks for having me.
I mentioned the screenplay and the movie and the novel, but didn't this actually begin as a short story called Animal Rescue?
It actually began a little before that. It began as a failed novel.
A short story?
It was the first chapter of a novel that just never came together. And about 5 years after I shelved it, I kept thinking about the very first chapter, which was about this guy, this lonely guy who finds a abused pit bull puppy in a trash can. And that was it. I just wrote it as a short story. And then the short story got a lot of attention, and Hollywood called and said, would you write it as a script? And I said, sure.
Well, it's a haunting image, a man hearing a dog whimpering in a trash can and opening the can. And I could see why people might find that attractive. But once you were asked to write it as a screenplay, did the problems that you had with the failed novel resolve themselves?
Yeah, because a novel is not akin to a movie. And a novel is akin to a season of television. A short story is the sort of kindred spirit of a film. So I had a through line. He finds the dog. He meets somebody who brings him out of his shell. And then as he's coming out of his shell, the original owner of the dog, a very disturbed man, shows up and wants the dog back. That's the through line of the story. And I kept the same through line. And then I went and I got to feather in. I got to put meat on the bone.
But then you were able to make it into a novel.
Right. Once I finally knew what I was saying 12 years later, I said, okay, now I think I can tell this story.
Well, at least you won't have the complaints that it didn't make the transition from the novel to the movie. People are always complaining about that.
Exactly. Now you can just – all the novel did was it just went deeper on the characters.
Well, a number of filmmakers have – scriptwriters who also write novels have talked about doing both. One of them, Richard Price, said, you can always tell the difference by looking at how much white space there is on the page.
You can always tell the difference in the...
A script is always going to have a lot of white space.
Yeah.
And of course, a novel is not.
Yeah.
But you've also written for The Wire, haven't you?
Yeah, I've written for The Wire. I've written for Boardwalk Empire. I've written several scripts since this one, so I'm having a nice, comfy second career as a screenwriter. It's all wonderful for me. I mean, no complaints.
But the book takes place in Boston, and the movie takes place in Brooklyn.
Yeah,
is this because Brooklyn and Brookline have sound so similar?
No. It's because they felt the producers felt that the sort of Boston white trash criminal storyline had been played out. And they said, could we move it a little? Because within the span of 8 years, we had Mystic River, Gone Baby Gone, The Departed, and The Town, all set in sort of, you know, low-rent Boston. So I agreed with them. I said, sure, why not? Well, let's go to Brooklyn.
And a lot of people are making movies in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
So is there a working-class, hard-scrabble neighborhood still left in Brooklyn?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You can't – clearly not in Williamsburg or
where they shoot most of the movies, Williamsburg.
Yeah, this wasn't where it was shot. No, it was – most of the movie – the bar I know was in Marine Park or was it over in it was definitely not a gentrified cappuccino-esque neighborhood.
How involved were you in the production of the film?
Pretty good. I wasn't day-to-day on the set because I, again, was over the other side of Brooklyn working at Steiner on Boardwalk. So I was doing a lot of stuff at night, but I wasn't on set more than, I think, 3 days.
Wasn't it your idea to cast James Gandolfini as Coven Marum?
It wasn't my idea. I was a big cheerleader. However, when it came down, when they winnowed it down to the finalists – for who would get the role, I wanted James very hard.
Do you think Marv has something in common with Tony Soprano?
Only as the flip side of the coin, Marv is the Willie Loman of gangsters. He's
Tony's the boss, and Marv is someone without any control.
Yeah, well, Marv just never made it. His ship passed a long time ago, and he just hasn't caught up to it. There's a line in the book, you know, you nurse that grudge like it was your one good lung, and that's what it is. I mean, he just keeps obsessing over this moment when the moment has long since passed him by.
And that moment goes back to his childhood. When he was perhaps a gentler person, he sang in a boys' choir as a kid, but the class difference led to some fights that got him thrown out of when he was just 8 years old, and that seems to be a turning point in his life.
That was what molded him, but then it made him want to be a it made him want to be a hard guy. But then Bob has a great line. He says, "We had a crew once, talking about Marv. We had a crew once. We were hard guys, but then one day it all shifted, and being hard wasn't enough. You had to be mean."
The choir master, in dismissing him, tells Marv that his voice will peak in a year. So, and then at nine, Marv's voice does break. He's never going to be a boy singer again. Was that the end of hope for Marv in terms of getting out of what his life pretty much had in store for him?
Well, no, he says in the previous recollection of when he was eight, that he fell in love in that moment with self-pity and victimization completely. He thought it was far better than any meal or any sex he'd ever have in the rest of his life. So from that point on, Marv becomes addicted to a narrative.
But neighborhoods also change.
Mm-hmm.
They grow. They change.
Yep.
Does that have an effect on Marv?
Not a good one. Marv is in many ways the tragic figure and sort of the catalyst for a lot of the violence that happens in the novel.
Would you say that one of the major themes of most of your work is the effect of the past on the present?
I think that's a reasonably common theme in my work. I would say in this one, it's much more people's inability to wrap their heads around, again, the sense that a moment has passed them by, that it's long since gone.
Also, our inability to escape either our roots or the consequences of our own actions.
Yeah, that's a big one. And, you know, one of the things I was talking about recently in Toronto was, I'd forgotten this, I had a very good friend. He got married at 33. He drove to Pennsylvania for his honeymoon. And it occurred to him just as he was leaving Massachusetts that he'd never left Massachusetts before. He was 33.
Well, unlike Marv, you did escape your background.
Mm-hmm.
Is it because you became a writer?
Yeah, Dickens said it was the quickest way out of Manchester.
But you grew up in a house, you've said, that had no books except for the encyclopedia. Your father never read fiction,
movies. He was a storyteller, though. He was a storyteller surrounded by storytellers. He came from a massive family, so we got together with the relatives every weekend, and everybody just told stories. And they told the same stories, but they just kept tweaking them. Mm. Everything was a new draft. And I realized later that when I heard the phrase, fiction is the lie that tells the truth, that's what they were doing. They were trying to make sense of leaving their homeland. They were immigrants.
So in a way, he's teaching you how to write.
Yeah.
How many drafts do you go through in a typical novel?
Depends upon the novel. I mean, some have been pretty tight. Three drafts would be the earliest I let a novel go. Some have gone through 8, 9 drafts.
And sometimes you abandon them, as you did
only once.
Originally with this.
Yeah, I've only abandoned one novel, and that was this. And I think technically I didn't abandon it. It just was a 12-year gestation.
My guest is Dennis Lehane, who is the author of 10 previous novels, including some that became major bestsellers like Live by Night, Moonlight Mile, Gone Baby Gone, Mystic River, Shutter Island, The Given Day, also Coronado, which is a collection of short stories, and a play. His latest is The Drop, which is a novel and now also a major motion picture, as they like to say.
As they like to say.
The cast of thousands. You've had some high-end movie adaptations of your books. Did the process of watching someone else write the adaptation frustrate you?
Not at all. Not at all. I've had very...
You learned from them?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. I learned to start thinking in image when I wrote screenplays, not in dialogue. And I also, you know, here's where you can't complain. If they capture the spirit of the book, not the letter, that's impossible. But if they capture the spirit of the book, then you have nothing to complain about.
Well, Toni Morrison has talked about how upset she was initially by the film adaptation of The Color Purple because she felt that it really didn't reflect what she had written. And then she realized...
But Toni Morrison didn't write Color Purple. You mean Alice Waters?
Alice Waters, I'm sorry. Yeah. Sorry. Maybe it was Beloved. I can't remember. But anyway, yeah. But she sold the book. She knew what she was doing. Mm-hmm. And people came to read her book after the fact, after they saw the movie. And so she wound up getting readers anyway and got her story across.
Yeah, I did one event years ago with Rick Moody, and he had the best way of looking at it. He said that a movie is a $30 million advertisement for your book. So you hope hopefully the ad is good. That's my hope.
And J.G. Ballard said he can't remember what is life, his book, or the movie version of Empire of the Sun.
You know, it's funny in that I'm a huge that's one of my all-time favorite movies, Empire of the Sun. It's not many people's, but it's one of mine. And I always found that the book, which I read afterwards, was just never lived up to the images in my head from the film.
You've written that Tom Hardy, who plays Bob, engaged you in some very deep conversations about his character. What was that like for you?
Intense. Tom comes at you in fourth gear. I don't think he has a 1, 2, 3. And when you first are dealing with that, it's very intense coming at you. But it also kept me on my toes. It was really the 3 days that I was on the set. We had so many really astonishing conversations. It was a great glimpse into a great actor's mind.
Is that similar to when a critic engages you, writes a review that points out things that you might not have thought of otherwise, positive or negative?
A good critic, yeah. It has to be a good critic, to be honest with you. When I read a critic whose work I respect and then I put out a book and I go to that critic and that critic does not necessarily like the book or points out flaws, I do take them very seriously because I respect their acumen. If I don't respect the critic, I could care less.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with an actor. If there's actors who will pepper you with questions, and they're very dumb questions. Tom's not that guy. So
why am I saying this kinds of questions?
Yeah. What's my motivation here? You know, those kind of things. What Tom wants to know is, you know, Tom was very similar to DiCaprio and to Sean Penn in the fact that how deep can I go into the marrow of this human being?
Do you ever feel that the literary quality of your books is underestimated because of the genres that you work in and because they are so popular?
It's really not for me to concern myself with, to be honest. If it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, it's a duck. Whatever people want to call it is fine. No critical assessment really matters until after you're dead anyway.
You've said that in your work, violence sneaks up on people.
Yeah.
How so?
Well, violence just comes out. Violence, in my experience, tends to come out of the corner of your eye at the last second.
Is that the case in the introduction of Eric Dietz, the man who claims to be the owner of the dog that
yeah.
was in the trash can?
Yeah, Eric says at one point, Bob says, you can't just walk into somebody's life, and Eric cuts him off and says, that is life. Somebody like me coming along when you're not looking.
Now, you also, there's a Chechen subplot here
yes,
as well.
Yeah.
Is that something that came in later in the process?
No, they're in the original short story, but they're very much just referred to. And when the wonderful producers from Peter Chernin's group came along to get me to adapt the script, the first thing they said was, "We want to know more about the Chechens." Mm-hmm. So,
are they different than other gangsters from?
I don't think
the,
so.
Russian gangsters or
no? I mean, they have
Moldavian gangsters.
They have yeah, exactly. I don't. Gangsters are gangsters at the end of the day. I mean, there's going to be some flourishes that are different, but a gangster's a gangster.
And Marv realizes at some point when he's lost control of the bar that it isn't enough to be tough anymore; that you have to be mean as well. Are gangsters changing? Is the old Irish gangsters of South Boston or the mob, the Italian gangsters, are they seen as nicer than the new breed of gangsters?
I think every generation wants to believe that there was a glory day behind it, that the times were just a little more gentle.
Well, Whitey Bulger
was a terrible, absolutely terrible. So, no, that doesn't work. And a lot of the Italian mobsters of the time, the 1950s and 1960s were brutal. So, no, I don't think it's I don't think it's the same.
Well, I was going to ask if it's easier to be mean if you're not part of a community, but then Whitey Bulger came out of that community.
And, which he flooded with heroin, which was rather mean of him.
In fact, during the trial, little was made of the fact that so many lives were destroyed. They talked about the actual killings, but so many lives were destroyed by what he did that never really were written down.
Yeah, flooding the Old Colony projects with heroin, that was one thing. There was also moments where innocent people were killed, innocent people who were sitting, say, John Connolly fingered a guy for Whitey from across the street in Northern Avenue. Whitey and Stevie Fleming showed up and they killed him and the guy who hitched a ride from him, who was just a working class guy.
Do you think that violence comes from people being oppressed and out of control?
Yes, I do. I think that the violence of the upper class can be done with a pen. It can be done with buying the Supreme Court, with, say, Citizens United. It can be done with buying the Senate. The poor do not have that recourse. So the poor ultimately, when they say, hey, listen to me, and the powers that be say no, like Ferguson, this is how they act. They act with violence. They act with a sense of, hey, you know, sooner or later, somebody please look at me and listen to me.
But then we come up with the problem of whether violence is a valid instrument of the poor. I mean, it may be a way of getting attention, but it's destructive.
Well, it can be then used as an excuse not to do something. You can say, well, they were out of line. Well, see what they do to their own homes. See what they, you know. That doesn't absolve society of its responsibility. Again, in a case like a Ferguson, it doesn't absolve society at all.
We just had Israel Horovitz on the show.
He wrote a lot of plays
and just directed his first film.
Yeah.
He's also written screenplays. You have been writing screenplays now and television shows.
Yep.
And your work really adapts well to movies. So do you ever think of also moving into directing?
It's not a big desire for me.
I guess only actors and playwrights want to be.
Yeah, you know, I like because really my hardcore training as a screenwriter came out of premium cable television. That the idea of being a writer producer, the idea of being a showrunner is attractive to me, far more attractive than being a director.
Have you ever thought about adapting some of your more complex novels into TV miniseries?
Yeah, well, there's been some talk about the only one that I won't sell, which is The Given Day.
Even if you write it?
If The Given Day, if I controlled it lock, stock, and barrel, is the only way I'd do it.
Meanwhile, we have The Drop, a new novel by Dennis Lehane, and it is published by William Morrow. When is the film going to be released?
The film is released Friday, and the novel's out now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dennis, thank you so much for being on our show again.
Thanks so much for having me.